Y'all are both pretty having arrived. I'm going to call to order state and local government operations reform, technology, and elections. Representative Johnson, House File 456. Members, I'll move that House File 456 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Representative Johnson, to your bill.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Opportunity to bring this bill forward. Briefly, members, what this bill does is allows the Indian Affairs Council to conduct meetings electronically as long as certain conditions are met. And those conditions are that all members can hear the discussion, that the public can hear the votes and participate and testify at the regular meeting location. At least one person is actually at the place where the meeting is being held, and all the votes are conducted by roll call. It doesn't change any of the notice requirements with respect to the meeting. And with respect to the current law, organizations such as this can already hold electronic meetings in emergency situations, so there is a background for it. And there's a variety of other entities within the state that also similarly hold electronic meetings, such as the Governor's Workforce Development Council and the Board of Animal Health and the Minnesota Board on Aging. So simply, members, Mr. Chair, that's what this bill as presented at this time does. With me is Anna Marie Hill. She's the Director of Indian Affairs Council. She's just going to say a few words on why it's important to have this kind of a bill.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Anna Marie Hill. I'm the Executive Director of Indian Affairs Council. Thank you for hearing this bill. As some of you may know, Indian Affairs Council is the first council ever developed in 1963, and we are one of the largest councils. We have a 28-member board, and 11 of those are the tribal nations. Tribal leaders are the designees, governor's office, commissioners, and state legislators are all on our board. I think this is obviously good business to add this into the statute so we can conduct meetings by electronic means, and we will continue to abide by all of the open meeting law requirements and requirements that are necessary. And I do see, you know, in the as the budget grows smaller and smaller, as costs increase over the next years, that this will be a necessity. And you can save a significant amount of money by not traveling quarterly and having such a large group come out. So I do see it. Our IT person said that it's approximately maybe $50 to run a teleconferencing meeting, upfront fee. You would still pay per diem, which are part of the statute, that if you're entitled to the per diem, but you wouldn't pay the travel and the lodging and so on. So I do see that as a good business practice. And with that,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hill,
yes.
I'm not very familiar with this, but I was looking at the statute, and it indicates that there's 30 members. Is it, when you say it's 28, is it because the two at large are just assumed or they're not filled?
Oh,
Ms. Hill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, you may be looking at an old statute because the at-large membership no longer exists. After the revision a couple years ago of the Indian Affairs Council, we did away with the at-large membership. So we have, I always forget, 27, 28 members of the board.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Emmer.
Ms. Hill, I was looking at statutes from 2 years ago. So,
okay, yeah.
And it, I think it said 28 plus those two,
yeah.
So if they've been eliminated. It also says that you have offices in St. Paul and Bemidji. Is that still the case?
Yes, we do. And we've had those offices. I can't tell you if we've had those offices since the inception in 1963, because my knowledge of the history doesn't go back that far, but they've been for a long time. And it is designated in statute that the Bemidji office is the main office. However, we function two critical functions out of both, obviously running, you know, there's a large population in the western part of Minnesota. Our culture, we only have two employees left at the Bemidji office. At one time, I think that there were approximately maybe 10 employees. Maybe that was 10, 20 years ago. But budgets have been cut, and there has been a decrease. So now we have a total of 5 employees altogether, 3 here in St. Paul and 2 in Bemidji. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hill or, mm-hmm. or Representative Johnson, how many meetings a year does this council have? Ms. Hill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, we have quarterly meetings, so we have 4 meetings of the regular board. There are also 4 quarterly meetings of the urban board, each urban advisory board.
One more question, and then possibly, I guess it's a comment, but it'll be a question too. I am concerned when you talk about the public, when you do these meetings, how you're going to ensure that the public gets adequate notice, and more importantly, that they're able to participate. Because I can't tell from here that, you know, you can follow the same process you have right now of complying with Chapter 13 in terms of publishing notice and conducting your open meetings, but when you go to an electronic means, which to me is rather vague,
mm-hmm.
I mean, are we talking about a telephone conference? Are we talking about a video conference? Are we talking about outfitting some 28 members with whatever those cameras are called on their computers so that they can participate at their desk? I want to make sure that we're not just concentrating on that part. What about the public? And how are they going to be able to participate, mm-hmm. Appear at meetings? Because I assume, like this forum, you want the public to join and respond or participate if there's something that might impact people. I understand it's not a rulemaking body, but I'm also guessing that some policy starts with the council at times.
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to make sure that the public's able to participate?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, that's a very good comment. And ensuring that the or question also, ensuring that the public is involved, I think that is the primary concern, especially abiding by what the law states with regards to the open meeting law. And the crux of what we were, I don't think telecommunications should ever replace the importance of getting together. I think the more people that come together to solve the problems that we work on in Indian country, the better. And that means everybody at the table. So conceivably having a meeting space of this size, hopefully we would pack it in and people would still come and participate in the meeting. Now, I'm not an electronic whiz, but I can conceive having a screen and having the equipment, which we are getting ready to at this time with our laptops and the electronic means, and doing away with the other cumbersome stuff that we won't need in order to streamline. Also, but conceivably having the conferencing mechanisms where people can see, but having the individual who's doing the speaking at that time perhaps on a screen where the public, and then the public would be able to input. That's what I foresee, because I don't see it as a replacement for getting people together, and it hopefully will never get to the point where we have to hold meetings like this all the time, that we can have at least 2 a year where everybody can come together, because that's where the work is really, face-to-face is always the most important thing. So, but just ensuring, first of all, we have to ensure that the laws are met. That's the most important thing. And then public, that the public is available. And we've, as long as I'm there, we'll do that.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Hill, thank you very much. I will just tell you, I don't support these for the reason that you just said. I've carried them for emergency purposes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes a lot of sense when you can't get together for some emergency that certain organizations be allowed to in my view, circumvent some of the requirements, because I believe that without intending to do that, that's what this does. It doesn't allow the public to come in. Like you say, it's the face-to-face when the real work gets done. People not only come to these hearings to participate in the formal setting, but they try to get somebody's ear either coming into the meeting or leaving the meeting, and I presume it's the same with yours. I appreciate what you're doing. I don't agree, obviously, with the concept, but I also think that if you're going to have somebody sitting at home doing this from their desk, per diem is absolutely not appropriate. And perhaps maybe if this goes forward, you should be considering proposing eliminating one of the offices if we're not using them both.
Representative Emmer, I don't believe it has to do with the placement of both offices. It is very, very difficult, and it's getting to be more so painful to get 28 people to all agree on where they're going to go. And as our schedules get busier and we get more, I think, convoluted in the society with all the things that we have to do in our schedules and our demands and our so on and so forth. Having this, I cannot have the option to teleconference unless this is written in. And that option will not be a replacement for our meetings, because we need people present. The more public, and I agree with you, the public has to be there to hear our concerns. If I don't gather people in a public manner, and if I don't obtain people at, like, say, the training that we've held for the past 3 years since I've been there, legislative training. If people don't show up, we can't help with training people on issues or what sovereignty is or what the statutes are. So the more people that we have come to the table, the better. But in the case that we have to do this for emergency purposes or a couple years down the road when the budgets just aren't going to allow, I don't want to lay people off. I really don't want to replace people in order to get people together. I think our most important things are our employees doing the hard work of Indian Affairs. So I hear what you're saying, and I certainly understand what you're saying.
Ms. Hill and Representative Johnson, Subdivision 2 of your bill, I believe, outlines the requirements that are still in existence. Many of them at least partially address questions that were raised by Representative Emmer, so if folks might want to look at Subdivision 2. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Johnson, as you know, there was a big issue last biennium about per diem, and there was a long and I think pretty thoughtful debate about what's the difference between per diem and compensation as outlined in the Constitution of the State of Minnesota. And I heard from the other side over and over again that per diem is reimbursement for expenses incurred, and compensation is what you get for doing your job. So Representative Johnson, if we're going to allow somebody, potentially to be at home in their pajamas, attending a meeting via telephone, can you explain to me what expenses would be incurred that would allow that person to collect per diem for attendance at the meeting?
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I haven't really yet studied issue of per diem with respect to this bill. I'm simply providing the opportunity to provide electronic meetings for the Indian Affairs Council. So whatever the per diem requirements are by statute, I guess you probably know better than I, but this bill simply allows an entity such as this to, on occasion or when need be, run their meetings electronically.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just thought to members of this committee, as this bill moves forward, if we are saying that people can attend a meeting via telephone from their home and collect per diem, then I think we're going down a real slippery slope of redefining what per diem is. And so I think we better be real careful about that.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question I have pertains to the general public, and on line 2.1 it says the council may require the person making such a connection to pay for documented marginal costs. And so, you know, I'm thinking the general public generally doesn't pay for access to a meeting. And so since we're going to be having some savings from the way this meeting would be conducted, just a suggestion that you might consider not requiring the general public to pay to get connected for this meeting. And I think it might involve enough paperwork and hassle for you to keep track of that, keep track of them, collect from them, send a bill to them, figure out what it is, that the cost of doing that, since it is marginal, is not worth the cost of labor to do it. And in general, you're basically charging the public to attend a public meeting. I just highly encourage to consider that not be allowed and not be done. And the author here may want to consider maybe making such a change.
Ms. Hill.
Representative Kiffmeyer will look at that suggestion, definitely.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Dyson, are there any differences in what this council would be allowed to do by electronic means versus what cities are currently allowed to do?
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lanning, the authority that local governments have right now is in the statute for emergency pandemic situations. I think it was put in law last year. The wording is pretty much the same as what local governments are allowed, but the circumstances under which they can use the telephone or other electronic means is limited to the pandemic situation.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what the legal derivation of this is, but I'm aware of a city council that a member who is in the military was unable to be at meetings is able to connect and participate in the meeting via the web, electronic means, and that's certainly not under the pandemic exclusion.
Ms. Dyson, at this point, and this follows with Representative Lanning's question, how many other boards or commissions have this authority? And does that authority vary from the authority that's being asked in Representative Johnson's bill?
Mr. Chair, I'm trying to add up. On the back of the bill summary, there's a list of all of the boards and entities that have been given this same authority. I didn't mark down which ones are slightly different, but basically they're all the same. And you have the pandemic, other emergency situation for all public bodies, the Board of Animal Health during restricted travel for animal health reasons, the Ag and Economic Development Board, the Rural Finance Authority, Small Business Development Center Advisory Board, Minnesota Jobs Skills Partnership Board, the Governor's Workforce Development Council, Urban Initiative Board, Explore Minnesota Tourism Council, the Perfect Center for Arts Education, the Rehabilitation Council for the Blind, Minnesota State Council on Disability, Minnesota Board on Aging, Commission on Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing, Minnesotans, State Rehabilitation Council and Statewide Independent Living Council, Board of Electricity, Board of Plumbing, Combative Sports Commission, and the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. I would add that there in the general law for quite a while there's been authority to conduct meetings by interactive TV, and that may be what is covering the situation that Representative Lanning is referring to.
Representative Lanning, again.
No, thank you. That clarifies.
President Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I think moving in this direction is also going along with some of the, and this is partial response to Representative Biskin's questions about per diem, but the Department of Revenue particularly seems to have gone much further than any other agency that appeared before us, at least in terms of doing telecommuting. And because of that, they've closed the physical presence of an office in several places, and but keeping the presence of the auditors there. And so I think if we decided that if people are able to get their salaries sitting in their pajamas in their house, the question of should they be able to get per diem when all they've eliminated from their work is their is the driving time back and forth. So I think it's I think the idea that people can work at home and can work more effectively and more efficiently is something that we've got to start getting used to.
Representative Kalin, you're on my list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Speaking of lists, the list that Ms. Dyson just read off has 18 agencies or commissions, or 18 commissions, excuse me, in law. I carried the renaming of the Deaf, Deaf, Blind, and Hard of Hearing Commission last year. And Representative Johnson, what your original bill had, I believe that language, this would be the 19th if we, not your amended version, but the original version is introduced, would be the 19th commission where we see the exact same language repeated over and over and over in statute. So to that point, and I'm hoping that Representative Diskins might be persuaded to support the bill in a vociferous way, I'm wondering, Ms. Dyson or Mr. Shepard, whether we might be able to include a reviser's note in the bill to delete the that, I think, 20-something lines in each of the 18 other locations in statute, and or whether there's a... looking for direction on how we can clean up the statute books here so we don't have... printing all these extra pages.
Representative Kalin, at this point, we have one other person to testify. I'm going to bring down Sue Jens. She wishes to testify on Representative Johnson's bill, but in another way, so she could come down at this point and testify to the bill, and this leads us to at least a partial answer to your question.
Okay.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sue Jens. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Arts Board, and I believe I was invited today because we are also very eager to have this provision added to our statute, in addition to the other 18, perhaps 19, and others. If you don't know the Minnesota State Arts Board, I'll give you just a very quick overview so you get a sense of our business activities. We are, our statute, authorizing statute is 129D. We are a very small agency. We have 11 members. One member must be appointed from each of the 8 congressional districts. 3 members may serve at large. They're appointed by the governor with the advice and consent of the Senate. Our board meets 6 times each year. We post those meeting dates and times on our website in July, at the beginning of our fiscal year, so that the public knows exactly when those meetings will be. But our committees meet more frequently, and in fact, where we're seeing a real applicability of this kind of provision is in those committee meetings. I mentioned we're a small agency. Our annual budget is about $11 million. 10.2 of that currently is coming from the state general fund, and almost all of that money goes out as grants to artists and arts activities around the state. We see benefits in this bill in 2 ways. One is, first and foremost, and the reason we wanted to do it, is that we think it will allow greater participation and representation on our board. 3 of our members come from Greater Minnesota. We have members from Winona, from Fergus Falls, and from Duluth. And we know that distance is an issue for them in participating. They are asked to make a greater sacrifice and a greater commitment to the board than their metropolitan colleagues on the board. And I'll give you just a quick example. We have a member from Woodbury. If she comes to a committee meeting, she'll spend maybe 40 minutes in the car, both directions. She'll spend an hour or an hour and a half at a committee meeting, and then she'll go home and go on with her day. If our Fergus Falls board member does the same thing, she'll spend 6 hours in the car. She'll spend an hour or an hour and a half in the committee meeting. She'll go home and she will spend 8 hours of her day on this board service. And so we're really asking those people to make a greater sacrifice. And I know that's not new for those of you around this table who are coming from Greater Minnesota and are dealing with that on a daily basis. Weather is also an issue. Today, that Woodbury board member will have a sloshy commute going home, but she'll get back to Woodbury in an hour and a half in the snow. We don't know what the Fergus Falls board member might face on a day like today, and what kind of difficulty she'll have getting home. And so we have had Greater Minnesota board members who have turned down committee assignments because they're concerned about not being able to participate fully to fulfill their commitment to the board. And we've also had individuals that we've tried to recruit from Greater Minnesota who have said no to board service because they're just very concerned. So we see this as a way to help level the playing field a bit for participation. The financial issue. We obviously reimburse board members for their travel. So I gave you the Woodbury example. When that Woodbury board member comes to a meeting, we'll reimburse her $13 for her mileage. When the Fergus Falls board member comes to a meeting, we'll reimburse her $200 for her mileage. And so obviously there's also a big difference. We don't see the financial aspect as the principal one, though, because there will be some additional outlay of money to be able to create what we're envisioning would be a telephone system, mostly. We don't have a lot of technology in our agency, but if we were able to set up an 800 line where people could conference in from wherever they are, be that a board member, be that a member of the public, that might be the way we would start to implement this law. And so our preference always will be to conduct meetings in person, but for those occasions when weather, distance, or other commitments would force a member to miss their obligation to the board, we'd like this provision to be available, the same as the other agencies who already have it. And we would hope that you could support this and extend it to our agency and perhaps others who are in the same situation that we are.
Representative Kalin and members, Representative Johnson was approached because we have had now two agencies come just in this session, and there's an amendment, it's the DE1 amendment, that would give this authority, permissive authority, to all agencies. I'll offer the DE1 amendment. Representative Johnson and members, this is up to the committee to decide. Representative Johnson's initial bill was limited to the Indian Affairs Council, but since we already have 20 and others are coming forward, this would seem to be an easier way to handle this than just through a piecemeal. So members, I'll offer the amendment and then discussion. Representative Hornsley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the question I had on my mind even prior to your offering the amendment may be appropriate, that would be for Representative Johnson, Mr. Chair, and that is with the entities that have already have this electronic meeting authority, have there been any complaints, have there been any issues, have there been any problems that you're aware of that have crept up since this authority has been granted?
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, no, I'm not aware of any problems or concerns that have been raised as a result of the current electronic communications authority that's in existence.
Thank you.
Representative Sterner.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to just bring up, maybe going back to Representative Bitton's thought, and obviously I'm a new freshman legislator here, but when we, local government, what we had for our commissions, we had stipends for meetings, so they would get paid per meeting, and you wouldn't necessarily give them a per diem, and you wouldn't give them the compensation, so it might be just something where terminology we could just pay per meeting that they're attending either via electronic means or in person. So that might be a way to solve this issue, per diem versus compensation.
Representative Gumbel.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question. If we're looking at the DE1 amendment, we could look at it there too. It's subdivision 3. And, you know, the devil's in the details with these things. I think it's a great idea. I mean, we need to use electronics more and, you know, kind of work smarter instead of work harder and save some money in the process. I have the same concern about per diems, although obviously one is compensation, one is reimbursement, I think, so there might be some taxation issues there too. But in any case, under subdivision 3, it says each member of the entity participating in a meeting by telephone or other electronic means is considered present at the meeting for purposes of determining a quorum. As I think in terms of electronic means, I've participated in meetings that are basically running blogs or dialogues in text. It is possible for somebody to simply log you in, and then you're identified as present and part of the quorum without really knowing whether you're there or not. And I just have some concern there that while it's a good idea, is there a potential for fraud there, and is there a way we could tighten that up?
Representative Gutwald, I would have to refer that to either Ms. Dyson, or we would have to have someone, that would have had past experience. We have no data to support that, but Ms. Dyson, do you have any background in that? Or repeat the question, Representative Gutwald. She was talking to Representative Kalin.
I think the point is, in this section, it refers to or other electronic means, and I get that because there's so many different ways we can do these things, and we want to keep that somewhat open. But we also want to have some confidence that, that if somebody logs in through another electronic means, they're actually present. I mean, you can do that when you're at a meeting. You can see the person. You can sign them in. When I step into this room, you identify me as present for the meeting. I'm identified as part of the quorum. But if I'm logging in, there is the potential for somebody to simply log me in. My assistant could do it. My secretary could do it. And then we don't know for sure whether you're actually there. And so I'm just kind of concerned about that and whether there'd be a way to tighten that up so that there's some way to verify if you are participating by electronic means that you are, in fact, there as a member of that board or committee.
Members, Ms. Dyson is being asked questions that she isn't prepared to answer at this time. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to withdraw the DE1 amendment, and we're going to lay your bill over for the next meeting in preparation of addressing the concerns of all of the agencies and having an amendment that can perhaps answer a couple of the questions that have come up. And then we can, Ms. Dyson and House Research can prepare. So we're going to get you up at the next meeting first, and we'll probably have members an amendment that will address all of the agencies and the concerns that have been raised today. So with that, we're going to lay you over, and we'll have you back at the next meeting, and I would request that both of the testifiers return at that time. So thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would also request that a fiscal note be ordered if the DED1, if the amendment is to go on, because we heard from the testifier that there would be an additional outlay of money, I think it was the direct quote, with one council, minuscule, letting all do it, probably significant enough to request a fiscal note.
Representative Diskins, that was another concern, so we'll also take a look at that. This may end up going to finance. So, with that, we'll go to House File 312, Representative Cypher. Representative Seifert, I'm going to move that House File 312 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Finance. Representative Seifert, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and Committee, I do have a amendment that Mr. Shepard put together that would address the Minscue system and constitutional officers being allowed to give grant exemptions from their particular agency folks when it would be deemed necessary. It's coded A1.
Representative Seifert, I'll move the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion to the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Emmer,
I don't understand it.
Representative Seifert, to your amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, what this does is on line 1 point, or on 1.10, everything after the word reimbursement is struck, so we don't just give the exemptions to allow people other than state employees. It actually relates somewhat to the question that you had asked with the previous bill, is how do we allow people who are not state employees to be involved effectively in conferences, etc. If we do start allowing teleconferences and webinars and the like. Now this relates only to state agency conferences for the most part. But Minscue, with the technical colleges, state universities, and community colleges, have a number of state conferences that they hold, which could be done electronically, but there may be a situation where they want to open it up to other people, and this would give the Minscue chance where the ability to grant an exemption for better participation from the public if that's needed, and it would be the same for the constitutional officers.
Thank you, Representative Emmer. Representative Seifert, I think Mr. Shepard has a correction to the amendment. So, Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Seifert, in conversations a little bit before the meeting, I think Representative Seifert had indicated an intent on the A1 amendment on line 5 to delete the word administration and insert finance.
Representative Piper, you want to explain?
Yes, Mr. Chair, because the finance department has the purse strings, and there may need to be situations where the executive branch wants to have this in a certain place. We did have contact from the executive branch yesterday, and their preference was that they said Minnesota Management and Budget, but my understanding is that this committee wants to go by current statute, and it's, as far as we know, the Department of Finance yet. So,
well, Representative Seifert, yesterday we did begin the process of renaming. It's over in Finance now, so that agonizing task has begun.
Okay. It's up to the committee, Mr. Chair. I'll defer to your professional judgment.
Well, at this point, Representative Seifert, it's Finance, but my comment was that the renaming is crawling its way toward completion. Members, I'm going to move on line 1.5, delete administration and insert finance. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Right, the amendment, as amended, is now before us. To the amendment, Representative Morrow.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Pepper, I'm truly just trying to understand what's staying in the original bill and what's out. For example, do lines 1.13 and 1.14 about the open meeting law, are they dropping out now?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Shepard drafted this. He said everything from 1.11 to the rest through the rest of the bill is still in the bill. So we say, as Representative Emmer had brought up previously with the other bill, that we wanted to address participation for people who are not state employees, the public, and make sure that no one is trying to get around the open meeting law. And that may be something you want to put in that other bill when it comes back at some point as well.
Rep. Pimero. Nope. No. Representative Winkler. I'm sorry. Nope. Any further discussion to the amendment? To the amendment, Representative Kahn?
Yes, I guess so. I'm not quite, I don't quite understand why it should be finance and not administration, from knowing what the different jobs of what those departments do. I guess we have plenty of time to think about it.
We've got someone coming up. Welcome to the committee again. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kurt Yoakum with the Department of Finance, hopefully soon to be Minnesota Management and Budget, and the it was our understanding with conversations yesterday with the Department of Administration. After last year's merger with the former Department of Employee Relations, the Department of Employee Relations passed in legislation similar to this in the past. Exemptions were granted by the former doer, and so those functions have since gone over to finance. And so, it's our understanding, for consistency, administration asset, the former doer, now finance, would grant those exemptions, and that's why that was put in the bill as it is. The amendment.
No, that's fine. Any further discussion to the amendment as amended? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Seifert, to your bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and committee, this bill stems from input that I've received from constituents relating to state executive agency conferences. I would wish that we would perhaps spread this out and lead by example, where the legislature gets more involved in doing this as well. And this obviously doesn't address specifically to this bill, but I do remember, I think it was my second term when we had the flood up north, and the folks from Roseville, Mayor Pawlowski, Jeff Pawlowski, came with an entourage of people 7 hours down to the Capitol. Per diem, mileage, overnight at the Kelly Inn, they were allowed to testify for 4.5 minutes, and then went back the next day, 7 hours, mileage, the whole nine yards again. Now, this bill deals with state agency conferences where the DNR, the PCA, the Department of Health, Human Services, and others, who are spread all over, and now MNSCU, where the standard now in today's statute is generally the agencies are going to meet in person. And they certainly can allow for webinars and teleconferencing, but it doesn't happen, I don't think, to the extent we'd like it to. The new standard, if this bill were to pass, would be that the legislature would expect them to do things through webinar, teleconferencing, audio conference, etc. And then if they need to have a personal conference. But I think as we move into the 21st century, Mr. Chair, members, that in tight times we need to change, and the agencies need to change with things. We did try to make sure that with the amendment that the public is involved. We try not to skirt the open meeting law, that if that this is to be for state conferences, not for official decision-making of agencies. And I want the committee to be very clear about that, that if someone is doing rulemaking or setting up some type of standard where it would have the force and effect of law or an agency standard, that that is different than educational seminars, conferences that the state agencies have, etc., or training seminars. Is much different than when actual policy is being made, and that I think we need to allow more of a traditional situation, and we tried to have that wiggle room of to the greatest extent possible. So if there needs to be some exemptions, certainly we can allow that through the agency. But I would like us to try to lead by example. I've talked to the speaker about this myself in terms of trying to have the legislature moving more into this. It is very frustrating that people drive in 6 or 7 hours, testify for 2 or 3 minutes, and then turn around and go back with the time and money that's spent. With these particular agency conferences, we would expect it to be implemented across all agencies, and I don't have a fiscal note. I believe that's why the Finance Committee has requested this bill to see if there is a positive fiscal impact. The agencies, no doubt, I think every agency is being reduced by minimally 5%, some as much as 15%, and some are, of course, being abolished, so this probably won't affect them very much, but for those that are surviving, I think this is going to be a part of the tool in the toolbox for them to manage their budgets better and for us to be able to better utilize technology. And I can stand for any questions.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Minority Leader Seifert. I like the concept, and I think it's probably something that should be happening now without needing to put it in legislation, even codified. I'm wondering if you could. The two questions I have is, one is, is this an action that can't be done by executive order or even just a general memo from the governor's office, and shouldn't that have happened already? And number two, directing you to the line 1.7, the first five words of the bill, to the greatest extent possible. You know, it seems to me that actually your inclusion of that language strengthens the question I have to start with, which is, shouldn't this memo just have come from the governor's office? And I'm not critiquing the concept and the approach, because I think it's a phenomenal thing that we should be doing already, and I think all of us are tightening our belts. Just wondering if you can tell us why we need to put this, especially in statute, not just in session law or in a memo from all of us.
Representative Seifert, I think there was at least one question there.
Mr. Chairman, I think the question relates to, you know, could we just have the governor do this? And I think certainly that could be the case. Governors come and go. Statutes tend to last. And as I said, the standard in place now is that we have conferences in person, and that the webinars and the audio conference, video conferences are done by exception and not by the standard. And I think I just want to have the standard put into statute. If the committee feels the governor should do this by executive order, I certainly could go and talk to him. And the wiggle language, Representative Kalin, Mr. Chairman, there are situations where if the DNR is having a conference on water or animals or something where they need to be there and physically inspect something, we certainly have to have that there. And I did talk with some agency folks to try to make sure that we are being very careful in how this is drafted, that we're not, when official policy is made, that the public's involved, we don't skirt the open meeting law, that they have the ability to have some flexibility in regard to things where they have to be there. But I don't have a good answer for you, Representative Kalin, on can he do it by memo. I suppose he could. But some agencies are not necessarily run by the governor either. There are some boards, commissions, and other things that are somewhat outside of the governor's purview, where he can request that they do things. But essentially the Minsky board, for example, as Representative Plowski and I know all too well, tends to listen to statute, but they don't necessarily listen to the governor.
Representative Turner.
Chair, Representative Seifert, I'm just kind of, you were kind of talking about wiggle room and flexibility, but the wording I'm seeing on 1.2 being requiring and on 1.7 where it must be doesn't really give us that flexibility and wiggle room, and we're just talked about electronic conferences for agencies previously, and we're having problems in looking at that one, and now this is really going right to the must and the requiring, so it doesn't really feel like it gives us that flexibility, and I have concerns with that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cerner, the standard changes from having everything in person and the exemptions being by video conference, etc. But I think line 1.7 is to the greatest extent possible. And Representative Kahn knows when I chaired state government finance, we always had the most creative ways of giving flexibility. And I think those five words which should give you great comfort, Representative Cerner, and give the flexibility to the agencies. They need to have something in person. And as far as I know, the agencies are comfortable that gives them the flexibility. If they do need to have something in person, that they can do that. And if there's someone here to testify to the opposite, I'm certainly happy to hear their...
Representative, no one has come to us to testify. If there is anyone, but they can certainly come up. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seifert, I think this is a great bill and a great initiative, and I particularly want to thank you for sponsoring and supporting something that would focus on the efficient and effective conduct of state business while providing flexibility in how the rule is applied. And I'm sure Representative Pawlowski is equally pleased that state business will be conducted more effectively and efficiently as a result of this bill.
Thank you.
Representative Morrow, you have a comment.
A quick question, if I might, Mr. Chair. Representative Seifert, just going back to the greatest extent possible, I want to make sure I understand, and since you've apparently chaired this committee in the past, it's possible if I have the technology. Is this now going to require agencies to obtain the technology to do this? It would be possible for them to do the teleconferencing, for example, if they had the web cameras, the projection screens, and the like.
Representative Tucker, and the recommendation here is to send it to finance.
Right. Mr. Chair, as far as my intent for the record is not that we would have any type of unfunded mandate on the agencies or something to start setting up new technology or equipment. I could defer to Mr. Shepard if that's his reading of it. It's certainly not my intention to have any type of unfunded mandate, but this actually, and as someone who has been a quasi-state employee myself, this comes from people who were state employees who have some good ideas from MAPE, from MUSAP, from the AFSCME unions who have said we've gone to conferences that easily, I've heard this across the union scale, we could have been on campus or at a regional center and not drive 3 or 4 hours to Minneapolis. So I certainly would not have this as an unfunded mandate, but Mr. Shepard feels that it's worded wrongly. We could certainly change it.
Is that a question from Mr. Shepard?
Yeah, well, I defer to him in his professional judgment if Representative Morrow has a good point.
Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair and members, I would the way that I read it, this would be required to be done to the greatest extent possible, except under the circumstances in which Representative Seifert's bill allows an exemption to be granted, which would be for to allow people other than state employees to participate effectively or when otherwise essential to efficient and effective conduct of state business. If the committee, the author of the committee, wanted to loosen the standard, you could change the word possible to practical, which would give more flexibility, I think, if that's the direction the committee wanted to go in.
Mr. Murray, does that answer your question?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure it does, and I respect Representative Seifert's response. I know when we were sitting in the school board and we would get things like this, we'd say it'd be great, we would be loved to do this if we had the money to actually buy the equipment. And I wouldn't be sure the school board chair how to read this. I would defer, though, if this doesn't require the school board to now go out and buy teleconferencing equipment or the executive agencies do so, I'm comforted. If it doesn't, then I'm open to hearing about the proposed change. And if it should occur at another committee, I'm fine with that as well.
It is going to finance for sure. And from there, I'm not exactly sure where it would end up. But
Mr. Chair, Mr. Shepard brings a good point. When we used to represent Conn and I used to go over Shale and Must and all the different ore and
if
and.
I would that conversation today.
I would think that practical would be a better word in terms of the intent of this committee if they feel more comfortable that wouldn't require them purchasing new technology.
Mr. Shepard, why don't you, in written form now, tell us what we're going to do with the changing.
Mr. Chair and members, if the committee wanted to adopt the change Representative Seifert just suggested, the amendment would be in two places, page 1, line 3 in the title, and page 1, line 7, to delete possible and insert practical. And I will write that down.
All right. So we have the written amendment before us. I'll move that amendment for discussion. Is there any discussion on that amendment? Does everyone understand it? Representative Anderson, you have a question?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I don't see that as being a major change to me. Possible, practical means pretty much the same thing. I'm comfortable with reading possible because if you don't have the equipment, it's not possible to do it. So to me, it's not necessary.
Members, this is a tough one, so. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Gutwell, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, just a comment. I serve on the Minnesota Rural Health Advisory Board, and I appreciate this bill, and not just because he's a minority leader, but we have now, over the last, I don't know when we switched over to doing it, but we've started using existing infrastructure, Representative Morrow, which I appreciate the spirit of what your question was going to. But we are now using video conferencing existing facilities within the state to bring in all the people from this rural advisory board, and it's saving people a lot of time and a lot of money. It's won rave reviews from our group. So, I mean, to the extent possible, if codifying this helps move that forward more aggressively in the state, I think it's a great idea.
Further discussion to the bill is amended. I'm sorry, Representative Nelson.
I'm hiding over here in a spot I normally don't sit. Mr. Chair.
There's a reason, too, but that's
Mr. Chair and Representative Seifert, this is more of a statement than a question, but I guess the concern I have, it's not a problem, but just state agencies can do this and weighing this out. If somebody knew there was going to be a contentious hearing that they had to go out to or testify at, could this be a way for state agencies, commissioners, employees to basically avoid contact with the public and basically stay hunkered down in their bunker to avoid the possible conflict and interaction with the public and our citizens? And that's a concern I'd have.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, that is a very valid concern, Representative Nelson. I think we addressed that a little bit with the language on 111, 112 on allowing the public in. These are my main concern on the conferences is that indeed they are conferences. They're training seminars. They are advisory seminars for state employees on new techniques, how to use how to type up new things for employee management and the like. This is not for, and we specifically narrowly tailored this bill, this is not for any situation where an official policy is going to be changed or a rule is going to be created or anything of that nature. It's mainly meant for conferences, and that's why on 1.7, some people were saying, well, how come we don't do this for rulemaking seminars? And the reason I don't want that is because if you're creating a rule on, and one example I can give you is the DOC issue up north where the DNR is changing the regulations on how big your DOC can be. We don't want that to just be something over a conference. We want that to be participatory by the public. So I tried to narrowly tailor this where it's mainly informational conferences amongst the internal agencies, and that's kind of where the state employees who approached me out in rural Minnesota had talked about that this was not to be any way of skirting public participation, but mainly for educational conferences, training, and things of that nature.
There's enough. Thank you. Further discussion to the bill is amended. Anyone else wish to testify? then I'll renew my motion that House File 312, as amended, be passed and re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Seifert. Representative Winkler, House File 20. Representative Winkler, it's my understanding that Finance wants this, so your motion should be to that.
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 20 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you. To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This summer I had an opportunity to go out to a conference in Seattle where the Chief Information Officers, the CIOs of most states were assembled for an annual event, and I had a conversation with the CIO of the state of Missouri, who told me and then demonstrated for me a product that they created in Missouri that's called the Missouri Accountability Portal. It was created by executive order there. It did not receive an appropriation, and what it did was basically create a very user-friendly single online source for drilling down into great detail on expenditures of state funds. You could flip through by agency down to individual departments, individual programs within departments, and get a rundown of all the money that was expended. It was easy, as I said, for the public to use. Right now, the Department of Finance, together with Department of Administration, other relevant state agencies and OAT, are embarking on a new MAP system, the new core state finance system. The proposal that we have at the legislature this year is for a roughly $90 million total expense that will go into this system. It will not all come from the general fund. In fact, it will be something called a lease purchase of the system, which essentially enables the vendor to finance the system for the state of Minnesota, and to spread the cost out over the longer term of the system. So the intent of this bill is to require that as we were building that system, a portal similar in nature to the one that Missouri created will be part of the new finance system, and it requires the agencies to include that type of portal with access to the public into the new system that they're creating. And that is the intent of the bill. I could walk through it quickly, but if you have any questions on particular
items. I have one person that wishes to testify. Mr. Yoakum, did you want to come down and testify to the bill? Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, once again, my name is Kurt Yoakum with the Department of Finance and the Minnesota Management and Budget. We just wanted to let the committee know that we're supportive of Representative Winkler's efforts. The state, our department has begun this process actually over the course of the summer. We're hoping to very quickly release but pretty close to what Representative Winkler is proposing today. We're having the state agency scrub any data that might be considered confidential or private to make sure that we don't violate any data practices laws, and then also to make sure that the website is accessible to all Minnesotans, meaning make sure that the disability accessibility is there and there's no problems. With what Representative Winkler is proposing today, by and large, there's a lot of it we will be able to do right away. But this is stages, and I think Representative Winkler makes it clear in the final section in the consultation that some of the items that we are going to do are going to. We won't be able to immediately do every portion of it, and part of that comes with the new MAP system and the budget information system that will be up, the new one will be up and running this fall. The one item, though, that obviously there will be some sort of cost, which the Finance Committee will deal with, but there will be a legislative intent issue that we need to just make sure there's clarification. We're working on the fiscal note right now. And the main issue is under Section 1, Subdivision 1. Item 4, view information that's filed by each fiscal year or an aggregation of each fiscal year. And just how that is set up, how the legislature interprets that could mean a couple $100,000 swing in the fiscal note. And so we just want to make sure that we're working with the representative to understand exactly what the legislative intent is there. If it's one item where we can export each fiscal year's data, where the user could put that into a Excel spreadsheet or something like that, and that's considered aggregation, as opposed to if they have to do that right on the website. That'd be the main issue for the fact that that could be considerably expensive.
But hey, members, I have three of you on the list to ask questions. Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, while I like the concept, I have some concerns. Does it provide in this legislation that the actual contracts and actual budget documents will be available on the web?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, doesn't it, as well, an image of a contract or some other kind of electronic image, I guess, a PDF or something like that?
Representative Winkler, yes. A actual copy of the document, because when I went through and read what I thought was a fantastic concept, because some of us would like to see this done for the school board level, the city level, that any citizen should be able to go in and follow the money, which is, I think, what you're trying to create. The problem that I'm having, and I would like you to correct me if I misunderstood it, is that you are apparently, if we enact this, giving bureaucrats the right to define in these fields what are contained in these documents. And frankly, while I have some confidence in that, I've seen instances where certain things are left out, and I'd rather, if I were the one that was accessing it, as a citizen, I'd like to be able to make my own judgment calls on what's in the contract and what it's about.
Representative Emmer, I think the challenge would be the expense of including images of all those documents. The concept here is to use the underlying data. And one of the reasons I want to bring the bill forward is so that the legislature has some role in defining the criteria of what kind of information and how it can be presented to the public. I don't know how we could ever ultimately avoid having trusted state employees to code the information, enter the data correctly, etc. That's something that we have to entrust them to do. If you are concerned about the issue of how well we're following and tracking money around the state, I share that concern, and there will be some additional bills coming this session, I think, to help deal with some of those issues.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Emmer.
Representative Winkler, I would challenge your belief or your opinion that it would be more expensive to actually scan in copies of documents and make them available to the public versus the manpower that will be required to input, first decipher and then input into different fields all of this information. The concern I have, which I would hope others share, is not that we have a problem with the people, the state employee per se, but it's with the system. You get these departments, and they are, whether they're conscious of it or it's just a subconscious behavior, they are into self-preservation and growth. That's not what this is for. What I understood you were doing was trying to create a transparency and an accountability where a citizen can go in and say that's incorrect and then have input. And I'm afraid that this is going to be a lot more expensive than it would need to be. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Embright, currently under the way things are done, you have to enter all of the financial information into the MAP system. All the data, whether it's coded or whether it can be scanned and copied somehow from documents or electronic forms, et cetera, you have to have that data in the system. So it's a question of how you organize the data and how you provide access to it. To provide images of contracts is a more expensive thing to do. And there are vendors out that do this for government entities. They provide imaging contracts, and either the entity pays them to come in and scan all these documents and provide them electronically, or if there's value to the document, sometimes the vendor will say, we'll provide them electronically and I'll take a little cut of the revenue that you generate by providing them electronically. That's often what happens in the case of recorders' offices. So there is an additional expense for providing an image of the document. And entering the data into the system is part of the normal course of business for what they do anyway. So maybe we have a disagreement on the effectiveness of not having images, but I don't think that there's a question that it's more expensive.
Mr. Chair, I do appreciate that, and we do have apparently a different perspective, but I go to, for instance, Subdivision 2 under contracts, subpart 2, I guess it would, well, it's number 2. A brief statement of the purpose of the contract or grant, and then C, information on new contract. It kind of goes to what Mr. Yoakum was saying on the first page when you talk about aggregating information. I think that this is going to create more work than as opposed to consolidation. So we can go back and forth on what the costs are. I assume that's something that finance will be handling. My point was, if you want actual transparency, real transparency, then put the documents online where people can access them. Put the budget of each agency online so somebody can go in and see the budget and then trace the backup information, which is also there. Hopefully we're headed in that direction.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Emmer, I don't know if this helps, but at least the way our system is designed, and I think it keeps with Representative Winkler's intent and the way he initially described the bill, we do start at a 10,000-foot level of the agencies, of all agencies' budgets, ranking them from highest to lowest, and it is the drill-down feature all the way down to the individual contract. As Representative Winkler mentioned, with the MAP system, there is a description when you get down to that contract, at least with the newer contract, of what that intent is. I think the committee is going to hear a bill next to make sure that every state agency website has a contact name. Our department already does that, and I probably on a weekly basis get calls from citizens in Minnesota, or actually across the country, wanting to know exactly what contract is out there. Under data practices, I have no choice whatsoever but to turn that over within 10 working days, and we work with Department of Administration on a weekly basis to make sure that those contracts, are turned over to the citizens that request those. So at least from what we're designing right now, I think the average citizen is going to have a greater opportunity to understand and see exactly what contracts are out there. And that, again, makes us at the state agencies, I think, that much more accountable to the contract and turning those over to folks that much more quickly.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I know that Representative Emmer was hoping we all shared his concern, and normally I would. However, at the moment, I was more concerned with whether or not I was on your list. And I am now, so I do appreciate that.
I usually reserve that phrase. If you want me to use it, I could.
Yeah. You're the chairman. Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, I guess just come back to a statement I heard earlier, and just to get the clarification of your intent. Without an enactment date on this bill, I believe it is effective August 1st of 2009. My question to you, Representative Winkler, is all of the components on this bill, in your mind, attainable, because this becomes full force in law August 1st, are all the components attainable by August 1st, 2009?
Representative Winkler. Mr. Chair, Representative Diskins, I don't know that every piece of this is attainable by August 1st. The intent of the bill is to ensure that as we go forward with a new financial system, that this kind of functionality is part of the new system. And that is why Subdivision 7 says that no funds appropriated for these purposes may be spent unless the commissioner certifies that the systems will allow compliance with requirements of this section. And at least the intention there is that as they spend money, they have to certify that these criteria are being met.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and I appreciate the intent, Representative Winkler. However, the words are the words, and if this is in law and it becomes full force August 1st, then they have to be at that point come August 1st. There is no wiggle room with that. All right. So I don't, I guess what I don't want you to do, I like the bill. I'm not saying that it's a bad piece of legislation. I think it's a good piece of legislation. And, you know, but it has potential of making some bureaucrats see lawbreakers come August 1st.
Mm-hmm. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, I think there's enough flexibility here that they can at least not hang their heads in shame.
Representative Stein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that this is going to finance, but Mr. Yocum, since we have you, you mentioned that line 1.17, the interpretation of that could result in as much as a $200,000 swing in the fiscal note. Could you comment a little bit on the cost of the current effort as you described it?
Mr. Yocum, Mr. Chairman, Representative Simon, I guess there's two parts to that. The first part is directly to the bill. A fiscal note is being worked up on the bill, and I can't give you a great figure. It's depending on the interpretation. We're hoping to keep it, you know, try and make it as inexpensive as possible. I think depending on how that line is interpreted, it could get as high as $400,000, but we're hoping to have it considerably less than that. That aggregation alone does make it quite a swing for the fact of the computer capacity that would be needed. I think right now, for what we have done, we have absorbed that in agency costs. I think there was an initial consulting fee to help us put together some of the fields that I think that contract was under $5,000, but I would have to double check that. Otherwise, most of it has been done absorbed by the agency through existing staff resources.
Chair,
Representative Simon.
Question for Representative Winkler then. We've heard some talk here about what fields maybe should or shouldn't be mandated in statute. Do you have any idea how this bill, how your bill, House Bill 20, compares to the Missouri legislation? Are we being more specific, less specific, or about the same?
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, the goal in working with Mr. Shepherd was to try as closely as possible define the functionality that's in the Missouri portal in the language of the statute. And it's not technology specific, it's information specific and functionality specific. So if you want to do, if we can do a comparison and do a better job, that's possible. But this is the best that we came up with based on the Missouri example.
All right. Representative Winkler, Mr. Shepherd, has this language existed in statute before in part or in an identical format?
Mr. Chair, members, in the 2007 state government finance bill, the legislature enacted a requirement for the Commissioner of Administration to maintain a website with a searchable database on state contracts, not as comprehensive as Representative Winkler's bill, but that's my recollection, there was not an appropriation to implement that, and so as Mr. Yocum has indicated, they've continued to work on doing parts of that as they built their new system.
Representative Tom.
Mr. Chairman, we originally funded it in a way that I think was totally appropriate, and then I was convinced to back off it, which I now think was a mistake. And that was, having been familiar with the grant system, having in a previous life worked on both federal grants and private grants, one of the ways that you fund the incidental expenses relating to a grant is by a percentage of the grant in called overhead or indirect costs. And so one of the things that we actually did do by law was require the proportion to use for the posting, information and so forth. And then administration came back. My good friend Jim Rose, who's very persuasive, came back and said, oh, that was so tough, and it was so, and it was ineffective to apply it to some small agencies and things like that. So we allowed them to make it, and he insisted it would work well if we made it a May. But they made that May much more permissive a May than it should have. So I think we're looking at going back to fixing that this session.
And with that, Representative Winkler, the concern about August 1st may be problematic, but let's move to Representative Gutwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, I too appreciate the spirit of the bill. In fact, it's very much like a bill that then Representative Eric Paulson introduced in 2007 and House File 376 at that time. And my only concern, it's a great idea, but we're trying to solve a budget deficit right now, too, and I'm not sure how it helps us get there. But I do wonder, I know Assistant Commissioner Jim Rhodes is here, and I wonder if he could comment on the expense and involvement, what it's going to take to implement this bill from his perspective.
Mr. Rhodes, I think you've been called to the table for a brief comment on the viability of the 2007 language.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here. Representative Kahn, thank you for your kind words.
Thank you.
Just for the fact that I used to chair this committee, this is democracy at its best form, and we used to, just like you're doing, construct good legislation before it walks out the door. The Representative Kahn, the bill that you're talking about was Eric Paulson's bill, and was not exactly the same thing as the grants management issue, and that's what the problem was. That was a searchable database that required, at that point, money that we did not have, and there was no appropriation for that bill, as Mr. Shepard, I think, alluded to. So it's a little different thing. Grants management is a little bit of a different issue, and we do publish all that good stuff. And as a matter of fact, I think the map is going to be on the agenda today in your committee, and Commissioner Badger will be there as well.
Mr. Rhodes, why don't you just identify
for
the record briefly, too, so we have
Jim Rhodes, Department of Administration.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
I got so excited being up here. Representative Gutwell may have a question for you.
Just a quick follow-up. Actually, my question, Mr. Chair, was to Mr. Rhodes was, do you anticipate additional costs? I know we've talked about possibly up to close to $500,000 to implement. I don't know that's an unreasonable cost for this kind of thing. And again, I think this is a good idea, but I do get concerned about the real costs in an era when we're trying
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'd have to defer to
Mr. Yolcom.
It's a finance thing,
though. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gottwald, to answer your question, as I said, we're currently working on a fiscal note, and part of this we've already, we hope to have up and running very, very quickly. To directly answer your question, I think the fiscal note is still a really rough process. I think we had said, talking to our folks in accounting, they said they're hoping worst case scenario would be $400,000 to implement. We don't want it to be that high, and that's why we'll continue working with the author to make sure that as far as some of the components that may, just the way that is interpreted, to make sure that we can bring it down by at least a couple hundred thousand, but we could still conceivably get into the $200,000 ballpark. But again, we'll have by the time this makes it to Finance Committee, we hope to have a straightforward fiscal note for you, so I'm not just giving you ballpark numbers.
Representative Tiffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Winkler and Mr. Yocum as well. Excellent concept, and I think going to be very, very good, especially when you're already doing some other work to piggyback this on it. My thing is in regards to doing databases and then also imaging documents, having a bit of experience with doing both. Databases are tremendously powerful and provide a different function for little bits of data, and a very powerful thing. However, if there is another agency that is imaging the contracts already or has that responsibility for that or a part of that, you can just create a link to that image. You don't necessarily have to have it directly in this database and can be a very effective way, but when you are building it, you need to be sure you build that capacity or that placeholder or that connectivity for that or work with the other entity to provide it to you. So I don't think this will be necessarily have to be a large marginal expense to be added to this, to incorporate it in, if you kind of make use of those kinds of technologies at the time you are doing it.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I agree largely with what you said. I think the challenge might be indexing those images to the specific piece of the portal or data that you're accessing through the finance system. The question would be whether the finance system would have some kind of a table of an index to all the different contracts and the images that are created. Because even if you have a database with all those images, you still have to have some kind of electronic connector between them. And so it may be that could be done straightforwardly, but I think I'd have to know a lot more about how they're building the system to be able to recommend that.
Mr. Chairman.
That's a good idea.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Chip Meyer, I think if you've seen me use my BlackBerry, I might not be the best person to speak about all the technology that we're dealing with here, but the one thing that we need to make sure we keep in mind, and that's why I brought up the aggregation issue, is we're dealing with millions of lines of data right here, and so any type of issue that comes up that affects those, it seems straightforward, but at least according to our technology folks, when you're dealing with that many lines of data, any types of change obviously involves performance and memory issues. And so we want to, and so that's just something that we would have to take into consideration. If it's something that's doable, we'll definitely try to do it. I would just caution folks, though, initially with the amount of data that we're dealing with, and the amount of contracts that the state signs every year, and just even every month, that is a lot of new lines of data that I'm not sure how our technology folks deal with, and so that's the only caution I would urge on that.
All right. Further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I would renew my motion that House File 20 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion failed. Thank you. Representative Kalin. President Kalin, I believe the recommendation has been to send this to finance also.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I have an amendment.
Why don't you make your motion first, okay. Representative Kalin?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1018 be recommended to pass, and the current motion will be to refer to finance.
All right, so the bill is before us. Now, you have an amendment?
I have the A1 amendment. In front of you, and then I also would like to amend or modify it.
Why don't you move the A1 amendment?
Okay, I'll move the A1 amendment to House File 1018, Mr. Chair, and then Mr. Shepard has in writing a modification of the A1 amendment.
All right, Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, I believe that Representative Kalin would like to do is to add a new line to the A1 amendment between lines 2 and 3. The A1 amendment, and the new line would read, page 1, line 15, after beaten, insert to the greatest extent possible.
That is my
representative, Kalin.
Mr. Chair and members, that modification would merely clarify that there are times when I think our state employees should be allowed to get lunch. They may be called away from their desk for other reasons, that this accommodates voicemail and other incidentals that can happen along the way.
All right. To the amendment is amended. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Nay. Motion fails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Kalin, to your bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Like Minority Leader Seifert's bill before, this is actually something that's come from constituents. I think probably all of us have experienced this ourselves, the frustration of trying to find a phone number to reach a human being at a state agency. And the folks that I work with most closely at Office of Energy Security, who I think are phenomenal state employees and do great service, to find a phone number for their office has been very difficult as well. They're working on resolving that issue and making it much more prominent. To the greatest extent possible language came from Jim Rhodes in the Department of Administration, making sure that that we do accommodate practicalities like voicemail and others, but Mr. Chair and members, I think it's not too much to expect that our state agencies be engaged in the same public service that we are. This would require that an email address and a telephone number answered by a live human being in Minnesota be posted on the front page of the website so that we can actually make sure that Minnesotans can access their government. To Representative Gottwald's sure to come question about the budget deficit, I think in a time when citizens need to be engaged in helping us solve the budget, I think this actually gets to the ability to engage in conversation and to really be able to find those budget-saving solutions. I know our state agencies are open to citizen input as well.
President Emmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, I was actually disappointed by your amendment because, and I don't think your, I think your bill might cause some trouble, even though I think it's the right thing to do. I'll give you an example. The Hennepin County Government Center, you call there, if you call the district courts, and I believe that would be a government agency. No?
No. Mr. Chair?
Representative Kalin.
Representative Emery, it would be a government agency, but I the definition, or the on line 1.14, it reads state agency, so it would only apply to state offices. And Mr. Shepard can confirm that for us.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Shepard, for clarification.
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Kalin is correct that in his, well, let me think about this. For a, if he's talking about a district court, that is a state office, even though it's in Hennepin County. So it, Representative Kalin is correct that the bill applies only to state agencies, but judicial branch, that probably is a state office.
Representative Kalin, that was my understanding, but I don't know if you can craft it in a way. If you call there now, there are two issues that I see that, I mean, this will move forward, but I hope you can address them. The one is the answered by a live human being. I'm disappointed when you put to the greatest extent possible because they will not answer the phone. We are getting voicemail, and it's a matter of waiting for forever. If you're lucky, try the Department of Motor Vehicles. You can call the licensing division, and you'll sit on that line. I mean, it isn't a matter of minutes. You can be on there for a long time. And the other thing that's happened now when I use the Hennepin County example is because of budget constraints, supposedly, they are not answering the phone one day a week. So you'll call, and it's Monday, Tuesday, and maybe Wednesday, you'll get a voicemail, which is rather offensive. It says, due to budget cuts, we're not answering the phone today. So it'll be Thursday and Friday, and I did paraphrase it a little bit. But the two points are, one, I would like it to be stronger with respect to a human being, even though we need to make it take advantage of the technology because you can't do that. It'd be nice to not only provide the phone number and the email address, but when somebody calls, they know what to expect. Because it's very frustrating, I think, for people who are trying to gain access. And then the last part, which is probably even a bigger concern, is who gets to define normal business hours? Because clearly that state agency has defined its normal business hours for answering the phone to 4 days a week. And I'm not saying that's appropriate or inappropriate, but I think maybe that's a discussion that's going to have to be had. So I don't know if you have a comment on those or not.
President Kalin, and we're getting very close here to the end of our time.
Mr. Chair and members in general, I think I appreciate Representative Emmer's questions. I think that they actually point to the flexibility that we adopted in the A1 amendment, the modified A1 amendment, I should say. The goal of the bill is to actually provide that phone number and email address. I understand and appreciate the frustrations. I've had them myself. I get voicemail or phone messages, voicemails, emails all the time from constituents expressing that frustration. That, I think, is a larger structural question that Representative Kahn's committee and others will need to continue to address. There are agencies that it is very difficult to drill down and find an email or a phone number, and I think it's a really good thing to be able to say to the public, this is how you reach us, and please be persistent with us. But the reality is that budget cuts will affect public service or access to the public in general. We don't want to make sure that we're putting a firewall up.
Representative Gutwalden, we're getting close to the
just end. Very quickly, Mr. Chair, thanks. I just to Representative Kalin's comment a little bit ago, I still get concerned that this has implications for FTEs and budget impacts. I recognize that it may be a conduit for getting some good ideas, although I would point out that the legislature is promoting a website and an email address, as well as our own phones that we already have for contributing ideas towards the budget. But I am going to ask that question a lot this session about how does the legislation coming before us actually help us address the budget deficit, because it's our top priority. But I do appreciate the spirit of this, and I can tell you I've had constituents call, too, who say, you know, why can't I get a live voice at the one of the blank agency?
All right, Representative Kalin, before you go to your final motion, you had promised the chair that you would identify a certain passage for the committee to enlighten us. Do you remember what that passage was?
I do not, Mr. Chair.
The chair does, Representative Kalin. And I believe the passage was a simple one. The reason why we have 2 ears and one mouth is so we may hear more and speak less. And I even gave you a hint. The chair is disappointed that you did not follow through. So to your motion, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I actually would like to, looking at Chair Khan and to your discretion, would you like to still keep the motion going to finance?
Representative Kalin, yes. Okay. This is going to go to finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Or staying here. There's your choice.
Mr. Chair, I will move that House File 1018 be recommended pass and refer to finance as amended.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. Motion prevails. Representative Poppins.
I move the minutes of Tuesday, February 24th, 2009.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
Motion prevails. Members, meeting is adjourned.